welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the latest in the Change Chat series. Today, I'm speaking with Sarah Glenister, who this is actually a real treat for me to actually be able to meet Sarah, because Sarah and I met online in the various change groups, I think on LinkedIn and then Facebook, several years ago. And we've tried to connect over the years, and finally we've managed it. We're in the same room. Sarah, welcome to the Change Chat.
Thank you. I'm very happy to actually finally meet you.
Yeah.
We feel like old friends.
It's like we're real. We're both real. We're going to have to take a selfie later and post it on the Facebook page. But, you know, look, I thought, Sarah, I was actually really keen to meet you beyond saying hello and putting, you know, real face to name, but also to hear some of the stories of the work you've been doing, in particular the areas of interest that you've been starting to follow. So, perhaps we'll get into that in a moment, but if we start at the moment, how did you get into change management work and what are you doing at the moment?
Okay. Well, I feel like I've always been into change, and I think that's possibly because I was a young child migrant, came here when I was 7, and my parents moved around a lot. So I was always going to different schools, moving house, probably every year or two. And I think when you do that, you actually become very good at change. Mm. And you learn very early that you need to present well, you need to establish rapport, but also you need to have something else, because when the new shiny girl image wears off, you need to have something of substance behind you for people to continue to want to play with you in the playground. Mm. Also, I became really good at, I suppose, looking at the ground rules, the unofficial ground rules.
Yeah.
Or different schools, all different ways of doing things. You could see the different groups. And so I became quite interested in how groups were at school and how they formed and who was who in the zoo. And of course, the other thing was I became very good at telling people what I needed, because it was being misinterpreted, and not just because I had a Scottish accent, but it would be misinterpreted if I wasn't clear about the message that I was trying to get to a teacher, because it changed from school to school.
Yeah, right. So you're a change manager from the age of, what, 3, 4, 5?
7, I think.
That's you do. The thing that's making me think of, does that desensitize you to change, though? If you think now about the work you do, because you're so good at change and used to change, do you have to think twice to remember that other people haven't had that background, and that's not an innate skill or alert skill for people?
Yeah, and I guess I didn't really realise that until probably 5 or 6 years ago. I was like, what's all the fuss about change? It's like, it's not that hard, you know. And I think one of the things that was self-reflecting was I was watching one of those Jamie Oliver school lunches things. And I went, you know, that's me. That, like, I get so enthusiastic about something, and I can't see why other people aren't quite as enthusiastic as me. So, I think now, having a few more years have passed, and I get it now. I get that for some people, change isn't easy.
Yeah, cool. So that was the personal start. How did you start professionally in the space? Did you get a degree in it, or did you?
Yeah, so my degree's in organisational psych. Mm-hmm. So that's where I really wanted to go.
Yep.
But the career path wasn't really there when I left uni in the early 90s. But I suppose my closest to org psych job led into change management. And that was around 2006, I think. I became the area manager for workforce planning for South Metro Health. And that was at a time of big change, and we were going to be opening a new hospital, the Fiona Stanley Hospital, in about 6 or 7 years' time at that stage. So we were doing a lot of the preliminary work, and one of the things I developed was a workforce transition framework. And as part of that, I identified communication and change management as the enablers of that framework and of that plan. And no one else had actually looked at it that quite that way. And so everyone was quite keen. And I went over to Sydney and Melbourne and Adelaide, in fact, as well, to talk to other health services about this framework. Mm-hmm. So they were actually using the framework as well. And that really started making me think about change more broadly. And, yeah, and that's probably how I first got in. Mm-hmm. My first big learning in change, so that was all the theory, yeah, was a big project that I did here. And it involved restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, one of the first things I did was get all the senior clinical people together. We talked about it. We workshopped it over a couple of days. They were all on board. It was great. Then I went off and to do my thing, all the background stuff. And, of course, things take a lot longer to do than you plan. And I was, as far as I was concerned, I ticked that box. Yep, they were all on board. Of course, I didn't go back to them, didn't keep in contact.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was they were going, well, she's not telling us what's happening. She's hiding something clearly. They're going to give us a model that we don't agree with. And all of those kinds of things. And I had no idea. And then I go back to them and they were really resistant. And I'm like, how did that happen?
They were all on the bus.
They were. And then they got off without telling me. So, yeah, it made it that much harder because I had to then work to get them back on board. Yeah. And so that was probably my biggest early change learning was just because you engage people at the beginning doesn't mean that they'll stay engaged without quite a bit of attention.
So fast forward to today, what are you working on at the moment?
Oh, well, I'm not actually in a change management job at the moment, but I'm managing mental health services for East Metro. But because of who I am, everything is a change, change is through everything. So probably the most exciting thing that I'm doing that I can talk about is I'm working with the police on a police co-response project, is what it's called. That's been operating for about the last 18 months, and it's about diverting people who are mentally unwell from the justice system into the health system.
Okay.
So quite a lot of calls that come through to the police are people who are a danger to themselves or others, and previously police would go out, they would pick them up, they would take them to hospital if they thought they needed to go to hospital. Now we have a mental health practitioner in the car who is able to actually assess them and assess whether they need to be in a locked ward or whether they can do a referral and they'll see the doctor the next day. They can see if we know them.
Mm-hmm.
About 50% of them we know.
Yeah.
So that's been really good. But we're talking 14,000 occasions of service in the last 15 months. So it's been fantastic.
That is
really
brilliant.
Really good.
So interesting, because that really raises that issue of changes that matter. You know, Daryl Connor talks about the work that he's doing now and his focus on clients where change really matters, and that's right in the sweet spot of that.
That's
for you,
right,
isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I decided a while ago that that's pretty much what I wanted to do, was work on changes that matter to me in the social justice area, and, of course, mental health is right up there.
How wonderful and fulfilling. Excellent. So I think one of the other things I know about you is, and I get a little bit envious, is that your commitment to self-education and skilling up is rather superb. So if I remember correctly, you did David Rock's Neuro Leadership.
That's correct,
A diploma or course?
I think it was a certificate. I'm not sure.
A certificate,
That was about 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, yeah.
Okay, so neuro leadership.
That's right.
What did you take out of that, and how has that influenced your change practice?
So I suppose just learning about the new developments in neuroscience was quite exciting anyway, particularly given I had done my psychology degree in the 80s and how much things have moved. And the whole idea behind that you can actually retrain your brain and that you have the capacity to change things physically as well as mentally. Yeah, people recovering from strokes. It's just absolutely fascinating. So that was a real interest of mine. And then, but in terms of the change area, his model of the threat response, that was really, really useful for me, particularly because I'm a change person at heart and can't and don't find it difficult.
Yes.
It was really good for me to actually see what it is that triggers other people into feeling threatened by the change. So the SCARF model, which is their model, I found particularly useful in my change thing. And so now when I'm actually doing a change, I'm actually very aware of not of being very clear in my message, but also taking into account that people really need certainty. They really need to know that they're going to have the capacity to involve themselves in the change, and that you don't split up teams, and that you don't just make decisions willy-nilly without actually talking to the people who matter.
Yeah. It's interesting, and we picked this up with Lena Ross in a previous change chat about neuroscience and change. And there is a counter argument or a debate out there in the change space at the moment, or it's probably not in the change space, it's in the neuroscientist community.
Okay, yeah.
Which is very concerned with the way that we business folk are using neuroscience, and it's inappropriate and clunky and wrong. And I think one of the criticisms that I've seen come through in the academic literature is that the neuroscience studies that we're all using look at how the brain responds in terms of thinking. It doesn't look at behaviour.
Okay.
What's your thinking about that? Does that gel with what you see in the workplace, or would that cause you to look at it differently?
So what are you saying? You're saying that the behaviours that you are noticing aren't changing? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I actually have great stock in the neuroscience and change work. It's more from the criticisms. They're saying that what we're basing, say, the SCARF model on is a machine-based study of how somebody is thinking, so in terms of inflaming around relationships and threat-reward response is a cognitive response. We're not using it to study their behaviours.
Okay, well, in my humble opinion, I think the brain is a prediction machine and it loves things going along as normal. It doesn't need to think. If we had to think about everything that we physically do, we would never get anything further than walking in a straight line. I know when the amygdala hijack happens and we actually feel very threatened, you do have a physical response. You run away, or you fight, or you freeze. Having experienced that myself, I know this stuff. Why is this happening to me? That was afterwards in hindsight. But I think a lot of our behaviours are based on some of the neuroscience with neuroscience stuff that I've read. So even just taking shortcuts and getting used to doing things in a particular way, I think comes from that brain science. So, I haven't heard the discussion, so I'm not sure that I'm hitting the nail on the head there. But
no, I that resonates for me, and I think to some extent some of this comes down to a lot of the criticisms that become evidence-based criticisms or research-based criticisms is we haven't studied it that way, therefore we can't put any weight in it.
Yeah.
Whereas I go, actually, we study it every day. We're watching people, we're observing, and it may not be in a controlled experiment, but as change practitioners, we're studiers.
And as a psychologist as well, that's how you change behaviour. That's the whole point of someone coming to counselling generally is to change something. So whether it's from a psychological perspective, I think it's very relevant in terms of what you think is what you do.
Yeah. So fast forward, more recently you have done a course in neuropresenting.
I have.
Can you tell us how that came about? What went on from when you did the David Rock to now have a diploma in neuropresenting?
That's right. So I spent about 18 months, I suppose, as a change manager with 160 change agents. This was after I did the David Rock course, and that was fantastic. Had a great time. Then I moved into a different role, different change role, and it was around more of the finance, coding, IT area, and it really wasn't me. and I needed to have surgery and knew I would need to take 6 to 8 weeks off. And so when my job had finished, before I went back to before I went to the next job, I scheduled the surgery. And it's not often that you get the opportunity to take 6 or 8 weeks out of your life to actually really think about what you want to do for the next 20 years. And, you know, apart from daydreaming over a cup of coffee, you know, you don't really spend that much time. And so I did. And what I was interested in was identifying some of my gaps, because I had turned things down in the past, in particular doing presentations or other opportunities. And I needed to figure out why I was turning them down, because they were really good opportunities. And I was fairly confident that I had the content knowledge and I had the experience and even some successes. And so I knew that I could tell people things of value, but I wasn't sure what the gap was. And I decided that I would go to some conferences. I would start networking and look for other ways to build up my experience and my qualifications. And then I saw this course, which is the Diploma of Neuro Presenting. And because I like to be first, it was the first time the course is run. So it's very, very new. And it was great. It was done in 2 blocks. So, you know, it follows the principles of neuroscience, not making you learn everything in a constrained way. So we had 4 days and then another month and another 4 days. Mm-hmm. And it was really great, because what it did was it tied in a lot of the stuff that I know about neuroscience from the previous course, my psychology, and I've got a teaching qualification as well. So it turned out that it's more adolescent kids, I suppose. So this was from an adult learning perspective, as well as the presenting skills and actually how to present in a way that is takes into account all the stuff that we know in neuroscience, and how to actually make presentations interesting rather than death by PowerPoint, which I don't enjoy as a participant, and I'm sure other people don't either. I did this course. It's fantastic, and it really has given me, hopefully, filled that gap of making me confident enough to stand in front of people and tell them my stories and tell them why I do what I do, and sell myself in terms of being able to help them.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, cool. Sarah, this has been a change chat that's gone way too fast for us.
It has.
What I'll do in the show notes, I'll put some links to the coursework that you've done and those kind of things. If people want to connect with you, is LinkedIn the best option?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be great.
We can do that. Excellent. If you have enjoyed this change chat, just a little reminder for those who are listening, jump onto iTunes or your platform of choice and give us a review. One of the things that I'm really keen and passionate about with doing this podcast is how can we demystify the world of change? And so being able to hear practitioners' stories like Sarah, we can do that if more people know about it. So we'd love a review if you've enjoyed this change chat. But Sarah Glenister, thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this change chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.